My name is Daniel Shaw. I'm the Associate Director of the Innovation for Successful Societies project, and I'm here with Mr. Graham Blair and Mr. Nuhu Ribadu. Mr. Ribadu, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak to us. We realize you're a very busy man, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, sir, as head of Nigeria's EFCC, you made several really impressive contributions. Among other things, you managed to prosecute at least 130 cases of fraud, which had never been done before in the history of Nigeria. You shut down over 2,000 illicit 419 scam operators. You were able to track down and begin the process for recovering nearly $5 billion in looted assets, looted money.
Yeah.
And today we would like to ask you to reflect a little bit on your experience and to offer some guidance to people who are asked by their countries to assume similar tasks. And to begin with, sir, I'd like to ask, at the time that you took over this position, Nigeria had a small team of reformers like yourself in place. Would you describe a little bit how this group started, you know, who it was comprised of, and how it was important for your own work?
Well, I think the group, I would say, somehow came together by accident. It's not really like it was a planned or prepared arrangement for people of that sort of different backgrounds and to come together and start something. I think it came just by accident. Individuals pursued their own lives and careers in a different way and found somehow by whatever fate found themselves in a part, at a particular point in time and believing in some of the things that they were doing, and together they collectively came together and helped each other. I will probably just be talking about myself for now,
basically.
Who I am and how I am, what really happened. I did all my life, I mean, I've been in the public service all my life. I went to school in Nigeria, all my schooling, I graduated as a lawyer, and I joined the Nigerian Police Force in 1985. And after graduating as a lawyer, I decided to join. What made me to do so was simple, because I believe that countries like Nigeria, if there is going to be hope, chances are it's going to be through enthronement of law and order, rule of law, doing things properly and correctly. And the best place where I could just put that into practice is the law enforcement, particularly in our own case, the Nigerian Police Force. I knew that the problem facing Nigeria, even as at that time, was simply that of lawlessness that leads to all sort of mismanagement, incompetence, not doing things properly and correctly, corruption, wastage, and so on. And it is because of lawlessness that you have insecurity. It is because of that simply that our laws are not enforced, and that people take advantage of positions they find themselves. And therefore, I wanted to put my own little contribution towards putting the society in the right direction and path. And therefore, law enforcement will give me that platform. I decided to join the Nigerian Police Force. I remained throughout in the police force until that 2003, when the chance came, when the EFCC was set up. And by chance, by luck, I got the opportunity to come and head it, to start it afresh. And that was in 2003. And then also, luck again, at that time there was a change of government in Nigeria. Obasanjo had a second term that time. And I think he also came with his own ideas of trying to be different from the first term. And there were a couple of people who also somehow came into the government for the first time, including, of course, people like Ngozi Nwala, Obi Ezekwesili, Nasiru Orelfai. I think four of us were the first nucleus people. I didn't know any one of them anyway, until after the appointment. Nasiru, we went to the same school, though he was a bit senior, but not that I was close to him or anything. But I when I got the appointment of the EFCC, and that appointment came simply because, one, I think even the government did not realize what exactly it was. It was pressure from the Financial Action Task Force, FATF, together with some foreign countries that wanted Nigeria to improve its own anti-money laundering regime. and therefore ask Nigeria to have a new law and then set up a commission to enforce the law. And I happened to get that chance to lead that commission. So when I got it, as at that time, Nasir El-Rufai was at the BP, Bureau of Public Enterprises, and so on. So I went to him, I met him, I said, look, I have this commission, and I think it can do a lot of good for our country if we pursue the thinking that I have, and that for us to start cleaning up, sanitizing, and setting a new standard and telling the world that we have changed, and that do things across the board, help do things properly and correctly. He got the idea. He said, well, that is fantastic. Then that's how it started.
I'm sorry to jump in there, but can I just ask you to talk in a little bit more detail about how this appointment came about? Because you say it was by luck, but I'm sure it was not all luck. Did you nominate yourself for the position?
What happened precisely was that I think the appointment of the chairman of EFCC was given, or the responsibility of getting people who will head it, was given to the then Attorney General of Nigeria, whose name was Kanu Agabi. And I worked with him. I was then the head of the prosecution department of the Nigerian Police Force in Abuja. And most of, if not all, the very important cases involving criminal distinct in Nigeria, I was handling it. I was the one prosecuting, for example, the Abachas, as at that time. I was the one who prosecuted the Speaker of the House then. I was the one that was going after almost every big case I was involved. So that was how I got to know the Attorney General. And he felt that I could do the job. Even though, you know, the culture in Nigeria was to look for an old elder person, very senior officer, but he felt that I could do it. I was not even in the country at the time when they nominated me. I was out. And I came to Atlanta here, Center for National Training Institute of Law Enforcement in Atlanta, Georgia here. So they nominated me while I was away. And it became a little bit controversial because there was a lot of resistance from some people within. But somehow, I think, what eventually Obasanjo told me, because I didn't know him, I never met him. Indeed, I worked for a while before even meeting him for the first time. He said that there was so much pressure that on everybody that he, when my name was mentioned, everybody said, oh, this is, oh, great, oh, wonderful. And he said he was overwhelmed. That was sort of few people resisted, and he thought that it was selfish because they wanted their own people. But every person who knew me was saying, my goodness, this is it. So he told me that, and he mentioned a couple of names, people within his government and around, that who somehow, oh, when they heard my name, they were saying, no, you can never get anything better than this. But he didn't know me. So that's how it happened. And I went through, of course, the screening of the National Assembly, and also with my members of the board, because there are other members who are going to be in the board of the commission. But as chairman, I was the chief executive, so the powers were with me, basically. So I got cleared, and I started it. But there was no money, no budget, nothing. And partly, like, typical of Nigerian things. Nobody thought that, you know, it's anything big or anything important, and just another agency created, and maybe it will just go like that, and so on. But I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I had a very clear vision for a long time in my life that I know the problems confronting us. I know that, you know, even the reforms people are talking about, you can never do reform unless you sanitize, you clean up. And the foundation of reform is basically to address problem of mismanagement, incompetence, and then this wastage as a result of either corruption or just pure misrule. And that I was out to address that. And that even though all of us were in one way or the other involved in the reforms, but I believe the reform that is necessary is that of cleaning up, to sanitize, especially in countries like our own, where things have been so bad for such a long period of time that it has become a normal thing, a routine, a way of life. Where, for example, like what you are saying, a country like Nigeria, over 40 years after independence, one of the worst in terms of corruption record, is the worst on the transparency list of most corrupt countries, but we did not have one single conviction for corruption. One single conviction. It's amazing. But I got over close to 300 convictions at the time when I left. So, but how do you ever carry out reforms when the whole thing is so compromised and so endemic? No policy of government can ever work unless you start from the basics, unless you start cleaning up and giving chance for policies to work. Unless, of course, you'll be able to preserve these resources and then not allow it to be converted into negative use. Unless you start making good use of these resources, no elite policy can work. No. You can continue to have fiscal bills, you can continue to have new policies, you can have budgets, you can have, all is trash, it's nonsense. And indeed, even the world will not believe you. So when I got in, and it became like accident, like I told you, I met with this Nasrid guy, and he also, he had connection with the other people, I didn't know them, and I was doing my thing, and they came with their own fantastic and wonderful ideas, everybody. Ngozi was coming from the World Bank, very smart woman, extremely knowledge and, in economics and so on, management. Obi Ezekwele, good, very, very fantastic woman in governance and issues of accountability and transparency. And we all came together. And that was the birth of the so-called reform team that really made a massive impact of change in the country. My own part was simply because I came with this law and order thing. I said that that is it. That is the key.
So can I ask you now, you say you had a vision of what you wanted to do. Now, I mean, a lot of people have visions and the real problem is to turn them into reality. And for somebody who actually managed that to turn his vision into
into practical reality.
Practical reality. I mean, over 300 convictions. So can I ask
It's so much even. It's even more than the conviction is a little thing.
It's a little, yeah.
But the impact of change of mood and attitude in the way people, the perception and the belief that it can be done.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one, I can tell you, probably out of the whole thing that set up a commission that delivers.
Yeah.
You know, this is very important. Go and see how agencies work in Nigeria and developing countries. No. But this EFCC, within a short period of time, I was able to set it up. And for it to be an example, it's not just a Nigerian household name, but world.
Oh, absolutely.
By any standard, it is a success.
So what's the secret? What? How did you go about in the early days setting up an organization that could
partly
have such an impact?
Partly, it's just you, who you are. It's who you are. I tend to disagree with a lot of people who say, well, it is your background, or some people say, oh, religion, or some. I think all this is all, this is basically, some people are like that. Some people could just be who they are. I've always been myself, and I've always believed in myself, and I've always was looking for opportunity for me to do what is right, and then prove it. And then I've always been a very courageous person. I take risks and chance. I'm fairly clear in my own mind what is really my beliefs and what is needed for me to actualize my own objectives. I told you about as far back as when I started getting, when I finished my school, I had an opportunity. There's something we call National Service, NYS, in Nigeria. After graduating from your university, you will have to go for 1 year national service. I did it at the time when politicians were being brought to justice after a military coup in 1984. So I participated in some of the investigations and the prosecution. And I found what I liked. I found that, well, maybe this is exactly what is going to make me happy in my life. And it put really into perspective what exactly what makes me happy. And I think that is very important in whatever you pursue in life. Ability to identify at early stage what gives you satisfaction. So It also helps, for example, your nature. For example, I'm not a material person. I'm okay. The way I live like this, I'm fine. I have never put materialism as extremely important in life. I'm not a rigid person. I'm simple, I'm quiet. I'm normal, ordinary, and so on. I also, maybe partly, well, I can say I'm from a family of public service people, you know, which means I didn't have businessmen in my family, maybe, I don't know, maybe subconsciously that played a whatever, I don't know, because I didn't grow up to see people with factories or manufacturers or traders in my own, and maybe that did not stop. I was just better. Huh?
Great. Thank you. Okay. Continue.
Yeah. So that maybe may help, but I'm also very lucky. You know, sometimes by luck you get to do what you like. Yeah. When I did my NYC, I finished, I had this opportunity, and I had other good jobs, very, very fantastic jobs. I had about 7 offers. Some of them were very, very good, but I devalued myself to join the police force because it's not a very glamorous work at all. It's one of the worst. There was not much salary, not at all. I'm from a very fairly wealthy background. My father was a cabinet minister. Everything was going very well for me. I was never a poor human being growing up. And I had a chance to, well, my name is a big name in terms of like Nigeria. It's a political family, it's all this. Mm-hmm. So things were just okay for me if I wanted anything. I had good, fantastic paying jobs. I had a job to start in New York in 1985.
Right.
I turned it down. I had a job to work with the National Petroleum Company. I refused. I had a job to work with one of the biggest banks. I was on a Peterson PZ Industries, a very big manufacturing company in Nigeria. They gave me a very big position. But I felt that, you know, my own happiness would be in doing what I like, what I enjoy. And to be honest, I want to fight for justice. I really have that satisfaction in believing that I stand for what is right and just. I dislike those people who take advantage and then selfishly, you know. By nature, I think that is me. Therefore, that opportunity to do that work, for example, of insisting that those who believe or who that also they are above the law and they are like God and so on, and they ask them to account for their own misdeeds, gives me that satisfaction, and it makes me to believe that I'm making a massive positive contribution for a progressive society. Mm-hmm. And that helped me because I understood from the onset that fundamentally our problem is that of failure of leadership. Leaders who selfishly take care of their own interests at the cost or to the detriment of the society. And it's across, even at our own local level, at the national level, at the continental level, even at the world level. Now, the problems of Africa is purely simple failure of leadership as arising from those who are in charge. If you see, for example, the tragedy of Congo, it's just one individual, Mobutu, that's all. Mm-hmm. If you see the tragedy of Zimbabwe today, it's just one individual, Mugabe. If you see the tragedy of Somalia as a country, it's Said Barre. Go back to history and look at it. And you go through all while you have these massive, pathetic, you know, failures. You will come to just one conclusion that it is a failure of leadership. It's mm-hmm. terrible. Today, Iraq is what is Iraq simply because of one individual, one madman called Saddam, messed his arm and destroyed the whole people. So, even in my own, as at that time, I actually somehow understood that the problem is that of these so-called powerful people who selfishly mess up the thing, and then everybody suffers for it. And confronting them somehow gives me satisfaction. It's not that I'm a wicked person. No, I'm not. Honestly, I'm not. Even those the powerful people that I used to bring to justice, it used to hurt me, because they are human beings. I hate to humiliate anybody, but I also feel that there is need for justice. I feel that we have to do certain things painful for the common good of all of us. So that is me, and that's how I came into the office in 2003. And when I met these guys, we came together. All of them were doing some fantastic things, some in public service reforms, others are trying to build fiscal discipline, others are trying to build procurement mechanism that would help us keep transparency and things like that. And we also came together, we said, well, there is need for us to even have a working document that can guide through this reform that we intend to carry out. And that's how we came about these needs. I'm sure you might have heard about it. Needs national economic empowerment and so on. So collectively we help each other. Yeah. At the end of the day, I think we fairly succeeded, and we showed that it could be done.
Yeah.
It changed the country within a short period of time. Very, very big, profound change.
But can I ask you something?
Yes.
So you have a clear vision, you know what you like to do, you're good at it, you've done it before.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, as the head of an organization, go about finding people who share your sentiments? So finding other good people.
That is it. You are right.
How did you do this? How did you find these people?
You are right, because I started by telling you the reason why, for example, I met Nasser El-Rufai. Mm-hmm. As at that time, he was heading BPE. And I took assessment of government agencies in Nigeria at that time. And I thought, maybe this is one that's closest to what my idea of a good agency that could deliver. And by my nature, I tend to go out to learn. I want to understand and acquire whatever. If I see something good in you, I want to get it from you. So I met him. I said, look, this is my intention. I want assistance for me to set up this commission. And he put one or two people with me who to understand the structure of how things are being done and how they run it. And I took the best out of it. Then, even before starting recruiting, I worked in the Nigerian police. I knew individuals. So I picked people. I was the one that picked the original first 14 people that I said, come and join me, please. We have a mission. And most of them are those I believe are okay, fairly good, that will only need and require leadership. Most people can be all right, depending on how you direct them. So, and continuously, I continue to poach and go for wherever I can get people. There are several people that I recruited at the initial stage. For example, I went to meet with the United Nations. I met one lady, one Nigerian girl, one Juliet Eme Ezekwe, and I was quite impressed with the way I saw her. I called her, but I said, come, let's work. Let's salvage our country. You are working for UN, but your country is sick. Come, let's work. And I got her. Fantastic woman. And I could, spot such talents. And I continued to poach. I got one or two people from the US here, so including an individual who was working for IBM and so on. So, and one by one, I was getting people. That is the start of. And when I started, the next thing I did was to engage the international community. I know I have a lot to learn from those who have the experience, whose system is working. My work is that of law enforcement. I approached the UK authorities. I said, look, first and foremost, the very first month I started working, I requested for an interview, for a meeting with the all European Union ambassadors in Nigeria. And they came all in their office. I went and I addressed them. I told them, look, guys, I have this opportunity and a chance to do something for our country, for my country. Nigeria is sick. And I think this way I'm looking at it may help us to get out of problems. What is needed is to fight corruption. What is needed is to sanitize. What is needed is to establish law and order. And I need your help. I may not get the help internally because the place is already compromised. It will be difficult. No one, few people can even understand my own message. So therefore, you as representative of where things are working properly and correctly, you understand these things, I need your support. And they say, well, we are ready. 100%. They went, I became their darling because I spoke to them honestly, frankly. They gave me a promise of giving me money there and then. And ultimately, I got a support of as much as 23 million euros from them, eventually. And more importantly, I singled out a couple of them that I thought I could get something direct. The American and the British High Commission. I said, guys, please, I need your help. The embassy arranged for a meeting for me to visit London and meet some strategic agencies that I engaged, and I spoke to them directly. I went, that was how I got to talk to the Home Office, Justice Department, Metropolitan Police, Serious Fraud Office, NCIS, and so on. And they paid for me to go to London and meet with these guys. And when I talked to them, I told them my mission. I want to set up a commission that can deliver results. I want to fight corruption. I want to fight 419. I want to fight generally. Yeah. And I need your help. It cannot be done in Nigeria. I want you to help me. If I start getting young Nigerians for you to help me train, I want the modern technology that can help me in the work that I'm going to do. I want to bring the best set of Nigerians. I want to indoctrinate them to believe in this cause. I want them to be like me. And they helped me. So after going back, I came up with a very rigorous system of recruitment in the EFCC, where I attracted the best. And through a process of interviews, we end up with the best. And we gave them the best training you can imagine. For example, the FBI alone, that is Justice Department in the US, alone, gave me over 40 trainings. Over 40. Sure. That's why our people are probably one of the best, I can tell you. Yeah. Until recently, when things changed in our country now. So, I took it extremely very important. These are some of the general things, but if you go to the details, I've gone to the real details. For example, right from the first time I'm setting up the EFCC, I set up a training and research institute at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I make sure that minimum 25% of the time in the commission, people will spend in training and retraining. Minimum, so 25%. 75% you work, 25% you learn. Because I made it a standard. Everybody must get minimum 25% of the time. So if in 1 month, well, you work for 25 days or 23 days and you learn for 7 days. I mean, just rough this thing. Yeah. So, from the beginning. So, it's all part of what I came up with, and then a system through which, because I'm starting afresh, and I'm going to build people that can really, really deliver, and so on. And gradually, like that, we started growing. And then I link and directly work to build the confidence with the international community, for them to have the trust and the belief that yes, it can. And more or less, for example, when I was setting up the financial intelligence unit, I learned from the US and the UK. I sent my own people to those who operate similar themselves, Africa, Mauritius, and so on, Italy, everywhere. I ended up having maybe better than all of them because I've learned from everybody. So, and that's how I carried out the assignment and how I built it up. Get the best quality people and then continue to improve them on a continuous basis, and also be very tough and zero tolerance for anything that is not proper and correctly. In the first place, the problem of Nigeria is corruption. So you have to make extremely zero level of corruption. Zero level, zero, non, because the moment you give room for it, it compromises every other thing. But more importantly, lead by example, lead transparently, lead openly. I have never had a secret, especially in the office. Whatever I do it collective, everybody. Whoever is supposed to know something will know. Whoever is supposed to be part of a decision-making process will be part of it. I have nothing that I do under the table or anything. I try to be open and transparent because it helps. It helps to send a message, a clear signal, how things are. It also helps everybody to open. And if you, as a leader, you are the one who is doing that, every other person will come along. Mm-hmm. This type of thing helped me to shape the whole thing and get a result at the end of the day.
But let me ask you something. You were talking about how you got support from the international community, and you were also looking to get support from within Nigeria.
Yeah.
Now, Nigeria has a long history of people saying, oh, we're going to clean things up now. Military regime saying we're going to clean things up. Even the word, you know, sanitize has been used at various times. How did you convince people that you were different?
You are right.
You had something new to
offer. Thank you very much. Thank you. You do it by showing practically that you are. For example, when I started working, the first thing I told you I did was I met with Nasiru El-Rufai. But at the week I was meeting, before I met him, I arrested all the 419 people in Nigeria, the fraudsters. You know, 419 is these people who sit in Nigeria and cheat others outside. I arrested all the big known, and they are known. In Nigeria, everybody knows them. They made so much money from the system. They have compromised the judiciary, the law enforcement, and they became like role models, the kings. I mean, it was shocking. One morning, everybody woke up, and they heard that I have arrested Fred Ajudua, I have arrested Maurice Ibekwe, I have arrested Mude. These are big names. Ade Bendel. And before anybody knows the name Nuhuri Badu, it started. That was how I introduced myself. And I was not joking.
So this was a strategy you thought.
Oh, yeah. And then what I did was that I also adopted what I then call suitable target for maximum impact. And I pick a target and make something out of it that can really resonate. I mean, it will go after, and then it will continue to boomerang. I did that with the big 419 fraudsters by attacking them. I'm sending a message to every single 419 fraudster. I'm sending a message to every single Nigerian. The time has come for us to be serious. It's not just rhetorics. It's not just talk. The day I arrested the Inspector General of Police, who was my boss, it was a suitable target and a maximum impact. It was, because it sends shivers across every policeman in Nigeria. And everybody, whoever is a doubting Thomas, will understand that it's a new thing happening in our country. An Inspector General of Police was arrested. Senate President was arrested. Governors were arrested. Man, you don't need to really shout. You don't need to use this rhetoric. The work is what, but you can do it systematically. And then I took my time to work it out as a plan. I started with the soft targets, because if I started with the politicians, they would have been knocked out easily, even before I said. But people didn't have problem if I was arresting 419 fraudsters. Oh, that's good. Yeah. When I went after the foreigners who were duping as the Vaswanis, oh, that is good. Everybody was hailing me. Oh, I was gradually going. I was building up momentum. And it was all planned. I planned it. I did it. So, and I got to a point where nobody could do anything, and people started believing. Yeah. And also strategically, part of what I did was deliberately, like I told you, I was very open and transparent.
Stop.
I have to take it. Go. Okay, yeah. So I was open, transparent. I wasn't hiding anything. Then I engaged the media. And the reason why I did with the media is simply because media can destroy, mar, or build. And usually they are the first of the skeptics you are talking about. We have heard this before. Huh, what is the difference here? What I said is I invited them to be part of whatever I'm going to do. I'm not going to hide anything. I will share with you the outcome of the work I'm doing. And I want to give you a chance for you to see my mistakes and possibly even criticize me, let me correct myself. I also try to convince them, look, let's just be serious about this, what we are trying to do. Because maybe this is the only hope we have in our country. And I can tell you, most people are okay. A lot of people are good, will want a good thing to happen. Even if some people are corrupt, they will still want a good thing to happen. They can easily tell them, and if something it is what is, you know, your sense will just agree with, they will come alone. I got as many journalists across into it, into this work. I told them to be part of it. And that, and that's one of the secret things I think that helped me to achieve results. Mm-hmm. Because they believed me. And even though ownership of Nigerian media is owned by those who I've prosecuted, maybe 60% of those who own papers in Nigeria, I prosecuted them most. But every single Nigerian media declared me a man of the year at one point or the other. Because simply it's the journalists that were voting, it's not the owners. Are you getting me? I'm telling you the strategy of how you can convince those who ordinarily will not believe this rhetoric, because politicians have done it, like you said. Oh, we are here to clean it. And so on. So it helped me to get them. So that is the strategy that I have.
So, sorry, did you want to jump?
Sure. So part of the media strategy was to get the media on board, but part of that must have been also to sort of develop the public constituency for reform, to get people on board with this. Can you talk a little bit about your strategy for getting people on?
Basically, that's what you did. At the initial state, I got the media, and then I progressively improved on that. I also decided to engage the civil society and religious organizations and so on. I organized one unit within the EFCC, what we call Fix Nigeria Initiative, where we engage the civil society and all others into like a sort of working together to help carry out all our common objectives. All of us, most of them are fairly good and they believe in those things that we are talking about, and share with them everything that we are doing. I also even set up a high-powered unit within for some eminent Nigerians and give them sort of authority to oversee and supervise the work I was doing, for them to advise and tell me what I'm doing, whether it's wrong or right, and correct me and so on. I also did it on my own. Initiative. So continuously I was out engaging the public one way or the other, never running away and never hiding anything. And that's the whole secret about telling you that the transparency and openness, it helps you to achieve a lot, especially in places like our own. If you have this mindset of opening up and whatever you are doing is nothing secret, chances are you will see what people will be lining up to join. You know, people will not have difficulty in getting in and understand what is going on, and will be part of it. And I was doing it consistently, one after the other, continuously, and I was ready to talk to people. I do not run, my doors are open, and wherever opportunity comes for me to participate in anything, I was very much available. If you want to come and talk to me, let's talk. Mm-hmm. You want to hear it? I'm there. Through that, but I deliberately refuse to engage or involve myself with personalities of government, okay, or traditional rulers, where this the culture of elitist engagement relation, where you visit a governor and then they will take pictures with you with, and then shaking, or you go to one traditional ruler and then you are paying a courtesy call. And that was not my idea of engagement at all. I went the opposite. I went to the people, the normal, ordinary people, and the media. Media is a good representation of that, and the civil society. and the intellectuals, the students, all of them, and so on. I was very much, and at the risk of even, I think at one point I even suffered. People thought that I want publicity, or that I'm the type who, it's not so, it's just strategy to succeed. And I would not have achieved anything if I didn't do that. There's nothing you can do about it. It's not like you are trying to impress anybody. It's just to get your own goals, I mean, achieve. You want to, it's a strategy to get result. And you need to build all these building blocks of support and allies and so on. And that's what I did. I did it to fairly a good satisfaction. I did it not just alone, first and foremost, also getting quality people who could make it possible for you to achieve that. Few strategic people. It's very important that at the stage of initial decision, you have to attract those who can just go along with you and deliver. It's very, very important. At times it can be luck, but a lot of times it will depend on you. You will always know what is good, and that you can shape things the way you like. And majority people are average, can go either way, depending on how you put them. That's my belief.
But now, let me ask, so you're doing all these things that are, as you say, they're shaking Nigeria. You arrest the Inspector General of Police.
Yeah.
I mean, these are big, bold actions. But that put you at risk, and that put you at, and your staff members at risk also. I mean, you're
very much
angering.
Risky.
Yeah, this is risky business.
But man, that is how life is all about. Life is full of risks. You take chance. And especially if we are going to confront a big problem. The problem of corruption in Nigeria is the worst ever we have ever faced. It's worse than even fighting for independence. We are talking about taking the country back from criminals and gangsters who control it, who do what they like with it. Mm. It's worse than, for example, those who fought for independence from, for example, our colonial masters. The work we are doing, or we have attempted to do, is far, far more difficult. It's far, far more difficult, for example, for those who fought against apartheid in South Africa. Far, far worst, I'm telling you. Because you can have a divided line of apartheid, people who are this and the others who are that, and that this is ideal, some belief. This is about money, it's about resources, it's about few people who have made so much out of the system and are continuing to hold on to it, and they will not allow or let go. They are the ones who control the democracy, the so-called thing. They are the ones who control the economy. They are the ones who control everything. And you want to take it out from them. They are not going to leave you. Imagine a crook, a kingpin, who stole $200 million from Brazil, and I came and took it away from him. In a country, for $50, you get kicked. You get killed. Mm-hmm. I took $100 million for Inspector General of Police. I took $200 million from a fraudster. I took another $500 million from this man. Man. It's the worst, it's worse than, I'm telling you. For example, those Mandela chaps, guys who fought apartheid in South Africa, it's worst. But then somebody has to do it. The reason why I'm telling you this is that somebody must stand up to do it. There is no alternative. It's just like those who fought and got our independence, those who fought and defeated apartheid. Some of us will fight to defeat corruption and poor management in Africa now. And that is what is going on now. This is the new phase. This is the new chapter in our struggle to be human beings, to do things properly and correctly.
So how does this translate, though, into your everyday work? Are there steps you're taking to protect yourself and to protect your staff that
you
don't
have to
compromise your ability to fight?
You see, another thing that I found out is simple. I lost some people. Some people were killed in the work I'm doing. Yeah, it's okay, it's natural. It's every policeman, if you sign in to do police work, your chances are you're putting yourself in danger. Or if you join the army, you know that you are fighting with guns, and then you are going to fight people who are also going to try and kill you. So that is first basic acceptance, you must take it. Two, I found out that if you work honest, you have reduced the risks. Even the criminals, they respect you if they know you are honest about it.
Honest
in the sense that they know that you are not doing it out of selfishness. Mm. They know that you are not doing it because you are wicked or you just want to harm them. they know that you are right and they are wrong. It helps greatly. I have found out clearly that depends on how you carry it out. But if you are a corrupt cop, your risk of getting knocked off is far, far higher than an honest cop. Because if you are a corrupt cop and you take money from somebody and you fail, they will kick you out. So that helped in ensuring. Also, you must also be professional and you take the basic steps to ensure that you survive. Don't enter into things that put you at risk. I didn't have social life. I've never drunk in my life, never taken alcohol. Yeah. So I don't go to any nightclub or bar and things like that. It helps also. Mm-hmm. I tend to tell my own staff also to behave. We are in a difficult job. Let's wait and do it after we finish this job. But while we are here, we think we should put it as most important. Mm-hmm. Achieve result first. And it also helps you to survive. And also basics for you to understand the basics of survival as a law enforcement officer. All these things are important issues that you all have to put together. But most important, I think, is just to be an honest person. Really, it helps greatly. Greatly. Mm-hmm. It does. Because it's amazing that even those that I have really caused so much pain still respect me. A lot of them still respect me. But there are also others who tend to look at it in the worst extreme case. I have survived an assassination 2 times. I had bullet wounds to my own vehicle. Right now, the car is there, that I survived it. So, but there will be 1,000 or more people who will want to, who have done so much that will probably want to kill me. Maybe out of them, maybe 10 are the ones who really carried out the. So you must work to ensure that you survive these 10. So basically, this is how I see. And then also, it's not a job for the faint sort of. It has to be, you have to be very courageous. You have to believe in it. Personally, in my life, I don't know what you call fear. I don't know. I honestly don't know what you call fear. At times, I want to be afraid of something. I don't. I could, for example, someone with a gun, I can go to him. I don't realize or really appreciate. Yeah, sometimes it's after it goes, and then I will realize, oh, you are crazy, man. But that is me. I mean, somebody will come and boom, open the door. I will never shake. Never. Never. This is me. Even when I was a child. Never. No, I can't. It takes me time for me to even react. Yeah. So I think it also helps nature. Yeah. Some people don't really take it. If you envisage or smell a danger ahead of you, you will just not be there. So, but I'm not like that.
But then do you ever look back now at all the things you did and think, sure, maybe I should have been a little more fearful, maybe I shouldn't have done that,
no.
Or maybe I shouldn't have gone after that person? Or
I looked up, I said, wow, that was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then I want to ask you about one thing in particular, this very bold move. You released this list of people of running for political office or being considered for political office that you said were being investigated for corruption.
Yeah.
And you put the vice president on this list.
Yeah.
So what was your thinking behind that? What did you see as the outcomes?
You see, the point is that, you know, we thought that we were doing things that I was not political at all. I was the vice president is from my place. Typically in Nigeria or Africa, you tend to support who is close to you, your relation. This is typical of our politics. But this is somebody who is fairly, extremely close to me. And we are from the same village, from the same place. But he was being investigated in the US. And he's one of those that was investigated. And we did not stop anybody, but we just came up with what we then said that could help the political parties to understand.
Stop.
I think I will not take it. It's just been...
I can stop. It's no problem.
Okay. So, what was I saying?
We're talking about the list and...
Okay, the list is, you see, as at that time, we knew in Nigeria, we had political office seekers who are even convicts in some countries. Mm. Nobody ever checked anything. Mm-hmm. Nobody bothered to know the status of individuals. No, the political parties or the public are never given the true picture of what is going on with their own. And I felt that maybe I should raise this a little higher. I did not say nobody can contest, but I said that these are the cases where we have these guys. If a political party is interested, go ahead and field him. I have no power to stop anybody from contesting. Or if the electorate wants to elect someone like this, fine. But I think I owe it a duty. As a head of an anti-corruption agency or a law enforcement agency, to make that available, especially in a country that never had it. We had people like James Ibori who are convicts who served time outside the country and go back to our country and become leaders. So why don't we just improve this thing a little bit? That was all what I did. And the so-called governor's list, there was not really a governor's list per se, but people have said. It's just that while I was doing this investigation, the government took it, President Obasanjo took it serious. And the political parties also, a lot of them took it serious, and they were changing the names of the candidates. They say, we don't want to present such a person. And it happens all over the world. Even as I'm coming from the UK now, UK is going through the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, these so-called parliamentarians, so the party say you cannot contest. It's exactly what I tried to do. It was a media that people released it in the UK. In our own case, it is we. And then just to improve the whole thing. And it helped to some extent. Unfortunately, it backfired. Some of the things that happen is amazing because it tells you the nature of corruption and how deep it is in our own country. Any little attempt to improve, to change, will have a very stiff resistance because of this strong, I mean, they are literally strangulating the country. They don't, how dare you say that such people should not go into public office. How dare you? And they lynch you after that.
But no, sorry, can I just...
Yeah.
Now, you got some support on this list from the Election Commission, right? Because they advise parties that names that appeared on this list, these people shouldn't run for office. Am I correct in saying
but
that?
No, I think what happened was there were some that the party attempt, the PDP, remove on their own.
Yeah.
And the AMPP, that is the main opposition party, also changed. There are others that they refused and they went to court. In the case of, I think, Atiku Abubakar, he was the one, I think, the INEC. It was the PDP and the Obasanjo people who came up, the government of Obasanjo, he came up with a list of those who were indicted by investigation. For example, I think it was indicted by the U.S. here. It was from the U.S. here. It's not even we. For example, DSP in the U.S., in the U.K., so many others. Others were indicted by some commissions of inquiry in Nigeria. Others with the investigation we are doing. So the federal government came up with a gazette of those who were indicted by various organizations for corruption. And it is in our own constitution. The constitution of Nigeria said, if such is gazetted, such a person should not contest election. But they went to court, and the court said they can contest. And that's the end of the story. They contested.
Yeah.
The VP contested. But the VP can't come to America today. Let him come. If he comes to America, he goes to jail. Yeah.
We've talked a couple of times about things that have made important people very angry. Do you have strategies that you used when the list was released or when some of these other programs that that really made top people, top politicians angry to deal with them. To
you see, this was originally it came, but it was not me that did it. It was the federal government that set up a panel, did it, and so on. But arising from the work we did, and I still stand by what I did. It's a very good thing to help change up. But while we were doing it, the National Assembly also called me to come and give them a record of the investigations that I was doing in respect of, particularly they were interested of, for example, the governors and so on. And I went before the Senate and I made the presentation. I said, this is it. This one, we have a case against him like this. We are investigating. This one, this is it. And that all of it, these people do have immunity. We will not be able to prosecute them now until when they are out of office. That is all. But of course, people pick it up and it became a political issue. And a lot of people are angry about it, extremely angry. But what can we do? You know, there is no alternative to it.
So how did you respond, or how did you direct your staff to respond if somebody important calls you up or shows up at your office and was very angry with you or your
Not
staff's
Not all
actions?
Of them knew everything I said was true. None of them could challenge directly, but they are just collectively angry that we are interfering with the whole political process. But nobody will come and say you are wrong. None. Every single one of them understood clearly what happened. But, well, in spite of that, you can't stop me. Well, we are all like this, so why should you single me out or things like that? These are the issues that people are talking about.
But they didn't call up their party leadership and have the party leadership call up Obasanjo and get people at the highest level.
Obasanjo
involved.
Did well in that regard, to be honest. I think the whole mistake of Obasanjo was simply because of the leadership that came after him. Mm-hmm. If it had continued, all these things would have been solved. But he got it totally wrong by the person he chose to succeed him. So this has caused the total collapse of everything, and everybody is out now with vengeance.
So we've spoken about a number of different things that you were able to do, like, you know, very bold things, very, very different things that affected many different areas of Nigerian political and social life.
Yeah.
Were there things that you wanted to do or particular strategies you wanted to adopt that you weren't able to?
A lot of it, because we were not political personally. And I think it's a difficult thing, because as law enforcement, it's so difficult for you to get into politics. And without changing the political thing, it's not easy for you to change the other part. It's a very difficult, tricky way. What I mean is, you can't afford to be involved in politics. We refuse to get involved directly. For example, the work of the INEC. We should have done something about it. For example, the political parties should have done more. But then the whole thing was so much and overwhelming that the work is too much. You can't do everything at the same time. You can only do that much. But incrementally, you will continue to improve. Unfortunately, it could not have been done within a short period of 4 years. There would have been need to continue. And then gradually, you get to a point where you do all the other things. Unfortunately, it stopped with this new leadership, and the reverse took place.
So looking back at your time, is there something that you think was, obviously you have many, many successes, but was there a particular success that stands out as something you're perhaps the most proud of, or something that is your perhaps legacy within the EFCC, any particular agency or particular group or something like that?
That I am proud of? Or
yeah, that you're something that you consider your biggest success.
And is one thing, or I think
anything,
just
anything,
to prove that it can be done.
Yeah.
The change is possible. I think we proved it. We showed that it could be done. And that actually corruption can be fought. And that it may succeed.
So,
and then giving a little hope, you know, that, you know, it's not all a hopeless case, that maybe there is chance. Yeah.
And now,
as a result of the work we did.
And now we sort of touched on how the support for these initiatives that you put into place has waned. So where did things go wrong? You know, what happened?
Leadership.
It's just a leadership.
One
issue.
Single leadership.
One single person.
One single person. Most important. Everything. One single office. One single wrong thing, and destroys everything. It's Africa. Or is developing world. That's how we are. It's like the same thing what Mobutu is doing to, it's like the same thing Mugabe is doing to Zimbabwe. It's probably exactly what Zuma will do to South Africa. Wait and see.
We hope not.
I'm telling you, it's not, unfortunately, yes, we hope not, but you do not rule out the possibility. And it's the same thing this guy is doing to Nigeria. One single person, you know, it's such a pathetic case in our in Africa that one person, if he goes, the parliament will come alone. The judiciary will come alone. Everybody will come. If he is good, the others may be good. If he is bad, all the others will follow like that. It's Africa. Today, the Supreme Court of Zimbabwe can never give a judgment against Mugabe. The parliament of Zimbabwe can never. That is how it is. It's the same thing with, for example, in Nigeria today. The judiciary that we were able to get to deliver 200 and something convictions, not individual, but conviction cases, completely turned the other way around. The parliament that did so well in under Obasanjo that stopped him from third term today, look at the performance of the parliament. Look at it critically. And that is what is going on in our case. One single office. Does it? It's tragic, it's unfortunate. It makes me also believe that, you know, even the work we did can only survive if there's good leadership. Once something changes, everything collapses and it goes to back to square one. Or worse still, worse than before, because it's worse when you attempt and fail. And then it becomes a bigger problem. Unfortunately, this is the sad case of Nigeria. Very, very sad. Very, very sad case.
Do you think there are any strategies that, that people like yourself could pursue so they're not so susceptible to one person? Do you ever think,
you first need the one good person up there to do that.
Yeah.
You need a good person. Now, if you get a good president in Nigeria, he will change all this. And you'll be able to set the standards so everything will work properly and correctly. But you need that person. This is the starting point. Yeah. It's so important in us. Those outside may not understand it or realize how it is, but it is so. I tell you.
All about leadership.
It is.
Nothing, no substitute.
No substitute. Because we don't have systems. We have nothing yet. So we rely heavily on individuals. And especially where the power resides. And that is it. He can take and do and undo. He can destroy and build. He can do anything. It's so sad.
So can I just ask you, just, you know, for the record, how do you respond to the criticisms then that you were, I've come across these things, it's somewhat derogatory, and I don't like to repeat
it.
But
go ahead, please.
That you were Obasanjo's Doberman, you know. That you were Obasanjo's personal Doberman, going after his political opponents.
Will always say things like that because it fights back. When you fight these guys, they fight you back. Mm-hmm. The usual thing is that to bribe you so that you don't do it. And I'll be like them. Well, they couldn't do it.
They tried.
How many times? You know, every single person I investigated attempted to bribe me one way or the other. Every single person. But they will go... They will try to also attack you on some other things, maybe social, they couldn't get anything. Yeah. They will try to attack you on some material thing, they could not get it. Well, at least I can say you are a dog of Obasanjo. Obasanjo is the president of Nigeria. You can call anybody in the government of the US today and say, oh, this is a dog. Can't you? He's the president of Nigeria. But the person who they are calling as his own Doberman, I sent his daughter to prison. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sent his daughter to prison. So I just leave you to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Could we talk a little bit about the leadership that you did have, about Obasanjo and your relationship with him? There must have been some work that you did personally to convince him to be on your side on some of these reforms?
Well, wasn't he fantastic? He's a good person. He understood clearly the need for the reforms. I think he was the type of leader who, if given the chance and has a good support, may do wonderful things. Tragically, I think he was surrounded by very wrong people at the early first stage of his administration. The second administration, there are some better hands that came in, and he allowed them to do the work, honestly. And he's also a very sports person, fairly good, a very patriotic Nigerian. He's wonderful. I have no doubt about it. All those things that I have told you now would not have been possible because without him. He is behind it. That's why I'm talking about the leadership thing. Leadership matters so much. In the whole of this thing, you should first give credit to Obasanjo. Without him, it would not have been possible. He saw what we did, and he bought in, and then agreed and supported it. And that is what made it possible for us to do what we did.
How is it possible?
But he failed in the transition, and that reversed everything. That's all.
What happened to allow him transition to his second term to switch the people that were in government? What led to that?
I think also it's part of the political maturity. I think the second term was a bit different. And those who supported him, I think he didn't need their support again. It was his, I suppose, final term, what he was supposed to be. And also, I think he wanted to leave a legacy and do things properly and correctly. And he's smart enough to appreciate the fact that there is need to do a good thing to leave a name and change the country. He's not bad. He's a very good person. And also luck, I think. For example, he didn't know me by chance, by accident. If I wasn't the one that headed the EFCC, no one would have had the name of EFCC again in Nigeria. I can tell you, take it from me. There are several government agencies today in the country. You don't hear their names. And he did not go out to identify me himself. Well, he knows a little bit about the other people who participated, but I don't know if that also really was the case. But most of them were, I think, by accident. And also, they were not the professional politicians. They were more or less politicians by calling, who somehow find themselves doing the work they did in the political environment. It was combination of several factors, like Obasanjo being a good person, meant well, also smart. But, for example, all the anti-corruption initiatives, I did it. He didn't tell me a word. Go and do this. Never. Never. Never.
But did you understand that he was supporting you?
Oh, too much. He was like he was in love with me about that. He liked me.
Yeah.
He supported me and genuine.
Yeah.
Genuinely. So because he knew it was a good thing for the country.
So did you feel you had some high level protection?
Oh, some. I wouldn't have dared do anything without that. Yeah. I could not have succeeded without that.
Yeah.
And I must concede to him that. That's why I keep on telling you about leadership is everything.
So so we've spoken a lot about leadership. Are there any other particular problems that you've observed in your work that really subvert the efforts of good people such as yourself and some of the others you've mentioned trying to make a difference? Or is it just
leadership? Struggle, you continue to fight. Every step there will be a resistance. Very difficult. I said that, you know, the fighting is far more difficult, more complex than all the other problems that the continent faced before, either fighting apartheid or getting independence. Because these are our own people who made money out of the system, who want to continue to remain. They will fight. Every single person you find in public office is making benefit out of it, and then will fight you back if you try to stop it. So every step that we took, I'm telling you, was a big problem, a huge resistance. So there are so many numerous of such. But like I said, if you are the one who is going to do this, you must be strong and understand the rules of this fight, and you must continue to fight. The most important is the support of the president. If you get it, oh my goodness, 2/3 of your problems are solved. Yeah. And that's what we got. And that's what reversed after we lost it. Are you getting the analogy?
Oh, yes.
We did it
oh, yes.
because of the support,
yeah.
and then we lost it because of the loss of the support of this new crook.
Yeah.
I understand.
Well, I don't want to use the name crook, so...
We'll take that off.
Yeah.
So what is the status of the EFCC today?
If you hear from me, it may not be the authentic one. You need to ask people, because
okay.
I may not be fair, because I was the one running it. I was kicked out, another person was doing it, but I don't see anything happening there. Absolutely.
Do you have time for maybe one more question?
One more question.
One more question?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Ribdu, we've taken a lot of your time this afternoon, and we really appreciate it. We can see how sought after your time
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So just to round out our interview, we'd just like to close on one last question. I was just wondering if, you know, when you sit here now in D.C. and looking back at your time in Nigeria and your work at the EFCC, are there any things you wish you had done differently or any things you would like to have changed?
That political leadership.
That's all. Yeah.
That's all. What painfully that I've come to the conclusion is that whatever work you do under, as long as the head is sick in Africa and the developing country, the work will come to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because all depends on this particular office. You ought to have done everything to ensure that we had got appropriate person who will do the right thing for the country. And that is the greatest regret. Well, it was beyond our powers. It was not something that we could do anything much. But if I had power, probably that would have been the thing. Yeah. So it's tragic and it's very simplistic as well. But one office will make or mar and destroy or build, as we have seen in the case of Nigeria. Tragically.
Well, a somber note to end on, but thank you very much
thank you
for your time.
Thank you very much.